Welcome to Family Talk.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm James Dobson for Family Talk. And before we begin today's program, I want to take just a moment to congratulate my great friend, Phyllis Schlafly, on receiving a highly prestigious award. This Wednesday, February 25th, 2015, the WIREC Awards Dinner will be celebrating the achievements and legacy of Phyllis Schlafly, as well as the 50th anniversary of her milestone book, A Choice, Not an Echo. That book had a tremendous impact on this culture. And I would like to personally congratulate Phyllis on this prestigious award and wish her God's blessings as she continues fighting to defend the American family. Now let's get on to today's program, which features Phyllis Schlafly on this special edition of Family Talk.
Ms. Schlafly, I was reading in your book that these family courts are keeping the proceedings hidden even when it's breaking the law, that they've been ordered to open the proceedings, but they're keeping it hidden anyway. Two questions. Why are they keeping this so hidden? Why don't they want people to know what's going on? And two, what can families who are subjected to this when it's illegal do about it to open up these proceedings?
Well, you know, we have laws saying that all court proceedings should be open to the public. But they station police to keep people out. I have lots of examples of that. And then there's the matter of the majority of people, I guess, who get hauled into family court really don't have the money to appeal. So the decision is never written in any book, and it's never made public. So that's one of the problems. You simply just don't find out what's going on. And there are just so many things the matter with it. And it's the judge to decide by his own bias.
In my experience, correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, usually dads don't come out favorably in most situations in different states with the family courts. That's been at least in Michigan here. You know, unless a father fights hard, he really is given the shaft. Would you agree or disagree?
Yes, I certainly agree with that. And there's a great tendency to give the custody of the child to the mother, regardless of the situation. Mm-hmm. And fathers get the shaft. So feminists really learn that, you can get out of marriage anytime without any reason, and you can get control of the children and the money and the house and kick the father out, and he has now becomes a visitor of his own children. And it's a very, very tragic situation. And there really isn't any appeal because everything is based on the discretion of the judge, and it's hard to overturn a decision that's made on discretion.
Phyllis, it's very easy for me to get on a soapbox when we start talking about the judges and especially the federal judges, because I have an argument that I've made. Some of our listeners have heard me say it before, but I've never heard anybody answer me. When Abraham Lincoln gave his Gettysburg Address, he said, "This is a government of the people, by the people, and for the people." In other words, it is not a democracy. This is a representative form of government where the people have the power. And how can federal judges now take the decisions of a state, of the people of a state, such as California? I've forgotten how many million people live in California. I think it's more than 20 million. Mm. And you have a majority of them saying that marriage is to be between a man and a woman. And they put that in the Constitution after a very contentious fight. Millions and millions of dollars went into that battle. And the traditional marriage perspective won. And now the Supreme Court and, of course, the Ninth Circuit before that and some homosexual judge before that have overridden the will of the people. How in the world can we have a government of the people, by the people, and for the people if the will of the people can be overturned by a small number of of judges appointed for life.
That's a good question.
That, you know, that agitates me more than anything going on in public policy.
Well, it should, and that's why I wrote my book called The Supremacists. They think they are supremacists, and that book's now out in print, but we put it on my website, eagleforum.org, and put it on so that you can download separate chapters and have a study group on property rights and family rights and immigration and so forth.
Well, that simple concept right there is going to destroy us as a nation.
It is, and we have 35 states that have passed a referendum by the people to stand by the definition of marriage we've had for centuries of a marriage as a man and a woman. And it's now hanging by a thread before some of the other courts. And I think we've got to organize the pastors and the politicians to make sure that the people are absolutely not going to let this happen. It's contrary to everything we believe. I think we ought to take a lesson from Abe Lincoln. And as you mentioned, but the one I quote is when the Supreme Court handed down what's generally considered the worst decision in history, which was the Dred Scott case, when they said poor old Dred Scott could be a slave and his owner could take him around. Mm. And what Lincoln said was, yes, the court has jurisdiction and the court can decide. We have to accept what he did to poor old Dred Scott. But we do not have to accept it as a national rule, and we do not have to accept it as something that's going to take place and apply to everybody. And someday that'll be overturned, and we'll get rid of it, and it will not be a precedent for other cases. And he said, otherwise, if we let it stand, we are subject to that eminent tribunal, and we are no longer a self-governing people. And I think we ought to take that attitude toward these court decisions on marriage. Mm.
To bring that up to date, I would like you to refer to the recent decision by the Supreme Court not to even consider those cases where the decision was made to call marriage exclusively a man and a woman, not even consider them. They just refused to hear them. And as a result, all of the decisions made that overturn that understanding have been accepted, increasingly accepted, as the law of the land. And the Supreme Court didn't even have to rule. I'm sure that is a source of agitation to you.
Yes, it certainly is, and you stated it very well. And, of course, these decisions were made in secret meetings of the Supreme Court, so we don't know what was said. But
we don't even know who chose, who came down on what side.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. No, but people are speculating, lawyers who watch the court, that if the conservatives on the court voted for that, because they were afraid of the wrong decision coming out. Mm. I'm afraid Kennedy would go wrong. And there are still three or four more cases coming up, and there may be another crack at it. And I think that we ought to organize a national effort to tell the court we're not going to put up with it.
I wish they would. I don't see any evidence of that coming. It bothers me. When I look at my fellow Americans of all racial backgrounds and influences, don't seem to care. They don't seem to notice. They're the uninformed voter, and they're not paying attention. They're not watching. Phyllis, tell us where this whole thing is going. Is it too late for the traditional family? Is it a done deal? Is it dead in the water, or is there any way to pull us back from the cliff?
Well, of course, like Reagan, I believe it's always morning in America. And I think I did show with the Equal Rights Amendment fight that we can take on the whole establishment and we can beat against really, truly incredible odds when we didn't even have the conservatives with us because they didn't believe we could win. Mm-hmm. And So, yes, and I think it's our duty to stand up for marriage the way God ordained it, and not let a few supremacist judges change the definition that we have had for millennia.
Where do we start?
Well, I'm in favor of hoping that some congressman will introduce a court stripping bill, which means to take away from the courts the right to redefine marriage. And, you know, this is allowed in the Constitution. We have a lot of good examples. The one I like to cite is when Tom Daschle was in the Senate from, I think he was from South Dakota. He didn't like the way the environmentalists were handling the elimination of some of the brush in South Dakota. And he put through a court stripping bill that said the courts could not hear these cases. And then, you know, when Congress voted to have a fence in San Diego against the illegal aliens coming in, they kept coming and coming, but Congress passed a bill saying the courts could not handle those cases, and they're not coming through San Diego anymore. They've all moved over to Arizona. But it's a legal method, and I think we should take away from supremacist judges the right to redefine marriage. They have no business doing that. 35 states have defined marriage in the traditional way, and the idea that one judge can come along and just overturn that is just not the kind of country we live in.
Well, when we're living with a president who feels that he can, you know, overturn a lot of things on his own, you know, it's going to breed that kind of attitude. But go ahead, Doctor.
Phyllis, it's my understanding that very, very few Americans realize that the Constitution does give the Congress the right to establish courts. Everything below the Supreme Court can either be eliminated or changed, or the number of judges can be changed. They could go to the Ninth Circuit in California, which has a history of doing dumb things that get overturned by the Supreme Court.
And Congress can define their jurisdiction.
They can do that. And they won't do it because they don't have the guts to do it or don't believe in the value of doing it. But the courts need my goodness, I get so riled up here.
It's worth getting riled up about.
Go back to the fourth grade. I remember it like it was yesterday. My teacher was Mrs. Harris. And she went to the board and she wrote the three branches of government, the executive, the legislative, and the judicial. And she talked about the fact that the founding fathers were very concerned about flawed mankind. We're born in sin. Mm-hmm. She could actually say that back then. And she said they were concerned that one of those branches would rise up and override the other. And that's why there was that's why the founding fathers created a checks and balances between the three branches of government. We no longer have checks and balances because the court has the final say. And that's not constitutional.
That's right. That's right.
Right.
You know, my
I do think Congress has a role to play, and I think they're intimidated by the aggressiveness of the feminists and the gays. And we've got to give them a little backbone to stand up against them.
I think everybody's intimidated. I think pastors, I think the American public, I think people under 35, I think even many people in the media. And, you know, Phyllis, in Chapter 7, you talk about the culture mocking the family. Can you comment, well, culture at large, but comment on the role of media and the influence it's had on the public's perception of the family?
Of course, the media has been is very much under the control of the feminists, and their views are out there. But, you know, a funny thing, Meg, when I started my fight against the Equal Rights Amendment, I thought our main issues were going to be, equal pay for equal work and some of these economic issues. And pretty soon I found that to the feminists, their whipping boy was Ozzie and Harriet.
Mm-hmm.
You've
yes,
probably forgotten
yes.
that. But
no,
it was a sitcom of the 70s.
Yes.
And you find, and I have lugged, I think, three prominent feminists this year who's still kicking around poor old yeah. Ozzie and Harriet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is, it was a traditional family, mother, father, kids, living in the same household. And that's what they're against. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it really is remarkable. And I think that when you start to create a narrative about, you know, things like Ozzie and Harriet and how, you know, women who have self-respect or people who want, you know, the equal pay would never like a show like that. And I think that a lot of young people agree with that narrative because it's propelled everywhere by so many media people. And mm-hmm. I think people just, a lot of young people become intimidated to stand up and say, well, I like that show or I don't believe in that. But I really think there's a lot of manipulation by intimidation going on by media and Hollywood. And I just see this in a lot of the younger people.
And also in the public schools.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yes, since they put the sex ed in the public schools.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And now they're rewriting history, so they don't want them to respect yeah. our great heroes of American history. They want to. They just want to teach children what's wrong with our country instead of what's right with our country.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, Dr. Meeker, ridicule and humor are powerful forces.
Yes.
To change the culture, all in the family with Archie Bunker, I think did about as much damage to the traditional family and
yes.
the traditional
yes.
ideas as anything that come along. It doesn't mm-hmm. have to be a well-reasoned argument.
No.
All it has
no.
to do is to make those who hold certain perspectives look either like angry people
right.
who are trying yeah. to hurt others, and especially minorities and those who are vulnerable.
The war on women.
Exactly. Yes. Here you comes know. The war on women.
Of course.
Talk about being yes. effective. What the Democrats have done here is made the relationship between men and women a political matter.
Yeah.
And they've really convinced a lot of people that politicians of one stripe are obviously out to get women. Man, I
and that's
don't.
And that's exactly what I'm talking about. And that narrative is very, very powerful because a lot of the younger people, you know, 40 and under, 35 and under, really respond emotionally, and they make decisions emotionally. Mm-hmm. Well, I would never want to be like the people who liked Archie Bunker. They don't want to think issues through. They want to respond on an emotional yeah. level to a twisted narrative that's been created to paint a certain party or you know, Christians or different people with a very broad brush. And they say, well, I don't want to be like them, so I'll go in the opposite direction. And it's very sad, but I see it everywhere.
Yeah. The sad thing is that All in the Family was very effectively done.
Yeah.
It was funny. I enjoyed yeah. watching yeah. it at the time until yeah. I realized I was being had.
Yeah. Well, I want to right. I want to bring up another one of the chapters in my book, Who Killed the American Family, that has played a big role in trying to destroy the American family, and that is incentives.
Yes.
And financial incentives
oh, yeah.
are very powerful, and that's what welfare so-called reform has done. It has provided financial incentives to have babies without getting married.
Mm-hmm.
And we have lots of instances where the woman is told, well, if you get married, you'll lose this handout that you're getting now. And the Heritage Foundation has identified 78 different agencies that are giving out cash or benefits of one kind or another. And most of it goes to broken families. And some of them even have a live-in boyfriend who has a job, and they don't even have to report that.
Phyllis, I have to ask, I mean, sociologists have studied this. The government knows that the ideal for children is two parents. Is two parents. They know this. If they know that, why do they incentivize for the opposite? I mean, if you've got a town that has an alcohol problem, you don't want to incentivize more alcohol being sold. You want to take it away because there's a problem. We know there's a problem with single parenthood. We know kids don't do as well. We've seen all the studies. Why then would our government incentivize the opposite of what's best for children?
Well, because if you don't do what the feminists say, you're waging a war on women. Mm. They have control of the media, and they have been able to put over their propaganda in so many ways.
I think it's the intimidation thing again.
Wow.
Indeed it is. But these incentives are very powerful, and they're also very costly. You know, you have some politicians who are saying, well, their strategists are telling them, now don't talk about the social issues, just talk about the fiscal issues. But you have to ask yourself, what are we spending the money on? And somebody figured out, I think it was Heritage, that figured out that we have spent more money fighting Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty than we have spent on all the real wars that our country ever fought.
I've heard it's $20 trillion. Phyllis, we're out of time, and I would like to end with this. And I think it's a very cogent question. The question is, so what? Does it matter? What does it mean that Western civilization is now experiencing what could be the complete death of the family, and it could become something it was never intended to be and already has in a way? What does that mean for the future of our nation?
Well, it means a lot of bad things. And as I pointed out, I think earlier, that during the Depression, the family was intact. It stayed together. And we survived. We grew up to be what they called the greatest generation. And we need to restore the family and put down all the propaganda that is spread against it by the feminists and by the gays principally and by the liberals, by the people who simply want to have government control everything instead of families and people control their own money. Mm. And so I'm hoping that my book, Who Killed the American Family, will show people where the problem is coming from. You got to know who the enemy is if you're going to fight it. And I'm hoping that it will play that role, because while everybody's commented on the decline in the number of intact families, I think a lot of people were fearful of telling who's to blame for it.
Well, you have done it very effectively in this book, Who Killed the American Family. And I personally believe, Phyllis, and I think you probably will too, that the institution of the family is the ground floor. Everything of value sits on that foundation. It's not just another institution. It is the critical institution. The Creator created the family before he created the church and government. It was the one he began with in the book of Genesis when he said, "For this cause a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and the two shall be one flesh." That's Genesis 2. And we dare not throw it on the ash heap of history.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If we do, we will destroy the whole superstructure. And that kind of says it all for me. And do you believe the same way, Phyllis?
I certainly do. And I think you've been a great voice for so many years. I thank you for your mission in this world, which is one of the big factors that's going to lead our country out of the wilderness into a fine America that we can be proud of, that is free and prosperous.
Mrs. Phyllis Schlafly, thanks for being our guest again. Mm-hmm. We will have you here every time you want to be on the air. And I think people desperately need to know what you have written through the years. But this new book is very, very timely. Dr. Meeker, thank you for participating today by phone. It's time we got you here in the studio again.
I will be back soon. And I wanted to thank Phyllis so much for her courage, for speaking out all of these years. You are truly an inspiration to all women everywhere, and may God bless you and give you strength for many, many more years.
Thank you, Meg, and eagleforum.org will give you more information anytime.
We appreciate you, Phyllis. And for those that would like more information about this book, Who Killed the American Family? By Phyllis Schlafly, visit our website, drjamesdobson.org, or call us at 877-732-6825. This is Ryan Dobson saying God bless, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.